Friday, August 13th. My ambition is to sleep until 10 o'clock, and the hardest way to achieve it is to go to bed at 2. I was wide awake before 7, and so was Lyndon. We despaired of going back to sleep, so put on our bathing suits and went out by the pool. The mimosa is blooming again, and the lawn is lush and green. We've had over an inch of rain since we were here last. I felt dull and weary, unable to go back to sleep, and not full enough of spark to go to work. So I lounged in the sun and goofed off, as Lucy would say, reading a book called The Group by Margaret McGrory. There are better uses for my time than it. James came home from his vacation to take charge while we were there, and to my delight, Lyndon met him immediately with the words, "What are you doing here, James? You get on back where you were. You're supposed to be having a good time, taking a vacation." I would have argued to achieve that, and I didn't have to open my mouth. I could have hugged Lyndon. I wonder when I shall see him so weary that he will want to lie around. Not in a long time. A.W. is in Washington, and Mary Ellen in Europe, of all places. So Lyndon rode around with Jesse Kellum and some of the staff, and I spent the afternoon in bed. About 5, I came to and drove around with Pat to see how the lawns were coming, the cemetery, the old Sam Johnson house. We made decisions about fall flowers to be ordered, a pecan tree to be cut down, more yucca to be put out. The one we presume dead is once more green on top. And then I drove on in alone to the boyhood home. It was past closing time, and I had phoned Jessie that I would pick her up and take her to join Lyndon at the Haywood. We walked over every step of the yard. It is so beautifully kept that it is a mockery for the short hours and curtailed work that we are able to give the ranch house grounds, or the guest house, or the old Sam Johnson place. Jessie was full of anecdotes that the hostesses tell about Lyndon's youth, his growing up time, and how their husbands or brothers did this and that with him. These they tell to the guests. We forecasted the future of the house. We know that this wonderful, generous outpouring of time, free, cannot go on forever. I'll express our appreciation sometime this fall with a tea and maybe a plaque or some presentation for those who've given the most hours. And then, sometime in the future, perhaps it'll be as long from now as next April, we must manage to hire another person or two to lighten the load. And then, just as twilight was settling in, Jessie and I drove over to the Haywood. For me to drive, especially on a lonely Texas road, is restful balm. On the talking machine, we found that Lyndon and his group were, of all places, in the Urschel house on the bluff. Would we come join them? Of course we would. A Secret Service boat picked us up, and we flew down the Llano to the confluence with the Lower Colorado, and in about 15 minutes were at the dock of the house we'd seen and talked about so many times. It simply grows out of the cliff, a perfect marriage with the terrain, the most lordly view anywhere on the river. Our host met us at the dock, Charles Urschel, son of a very wealthy man who was kidnapped some years ago and held for ransom, bound and blindfolded, in a lonely desert hut. It was quite a newspaper story. He was rescued after the ransom was paid, and he helped locate the place where he was held. Some notations of the exact times that he had made that he had heard an airplane going over above. His son, Charles Urschel, was a charming man. I would bet a quite conservative Republican. A bit retiring, but an interesting conversationalist and a man of many facets. He showed me around over the house, not so large as it appears from the lake. Superb vistas, a small swimming pool, and a funicular that descends the straight down cliff like a fly crawling up or down the wall. A strong rain on any guest who started to take that second drink, I should think. Lyndon had invited Mr. Urschel and his business partner to return with us to the Haywood for fried fish, and we went back in the dark with a full red moon and Lyndon at the wheel. Of course, I'd enjoyed Mr. Urschel, listening to his war experiences and his business experiences as we had a drink out on the patio before dinner. I seated him at Lyndon's table when we loaded our plates with fried fish, and I asked his business partner and Jack Valenti and Jesse to sit with me. What ensued was an evening I shall long remember. It made me wonder how Lyndon had survived in Texas politics. What a tightrope he has walked, and it is a miracle that he has been able to achieve national leadership in a state where a very articulate part of his constituency is as rigidly conservative, as bitterly opinionated as Mr. Urschel's business partner. We talked about Cuba. He wanted to know where Che Guevara was. And why didn't we send somebody over from the Lavender Gang in Chicago or Detroit? A gunman, I suppose, to take care of him, to take care of all of those guys. We talked about where it was all going to lead to, the help we were giving to this part of the world and that part, Vietnam, Thailand, all those Latin American countries. Are we going to be the milk cow for the world? He seemed to have a particular dislike for the Catholic countries, especially the Latin American countries, who go on, breeding more children. Here we got off on Planned Parenthood. His wife is very interested in it. And there, at least, I could interject a word of approval. Jack had just returned from Brazil and had been telling such interesting stories of the fabulous new capital of Brasilia, of some of the leadership which he thinks is top-notch, and of the unbelievable contrast of poverty in the barrios, the stench and squalor and hopelessness. Our dinner partner felt that took a dim view of all aid to such people, and at the same time I kept noting uneasily that he always referred to Lyndon as the big man, in quotes, or the boss. Jack, suave, gentle, sophisticated Jack, finally took umbrage, the first time I've ever noticed him, at the repeated references to the Catholic Church. And the conversation shed more heat than light. Yes. At my side, Jesse sat in dour silence. And the next morning, as we recapped the evening, he said, "If I'd had to work as hard to make my money as he did, I'd want to hold on to it, too." Our dinner partner had married the daughter of a very wealthy man. We choppered home soon after dinner and were in bed by 11:30, an unusually quiet and restful day in my life. But I'm finding that after one like Thursday, it takes me a day or so to catch up. Physical exercise is actually a restorative. I had excused myself from our vigorous dinner conversation, slipped off down to the riverbank, quickly changed and jumped in. In the black night and the velvet water, I swam across to the dock on the other side, touched it, and returned, floating, looking up at the stars and the dark outline of Packsaddle Mountain, and feeling more at one with life than any part of the day. A long swim reminds me that I am still physically strong, at home with my environment, and fairly good at something.